everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor. Chris has the weekend off, and I know he's playing somewhere doing something really fun. I have a special guest, though, today, so you're not going to be disappointed in this show. We're going to talk about something that you've heard in the news, traumatic brain injury. And if you have a child who plays sports, if you know someone who's been in the military, if you've been in an accident, in some kind of a car accident, or if you've had a fall, this is a show that's going to relate to maybe those experiences that you've had. So if you know someone who would love to hear this conversation who wants to know more about traumatic brain injury, tell them about our podcast. You can find us on iTunes anytime. Well, my guest, Dr. Tony Panettiere, is not a stranger to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. He did a show for us on the importance of sleep, and he's been on before, so we love having Dr. Panettiere back. He is a neurologist and sleep medicine physician at the National Intrepid Center of Excellence at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. He's a retired Navy captain who served 25 years on active duty, including a tour as the Navy Surgeon General's specialty leader for neurology. And he was involved in the establishment of the sleep laboratory at Naval Medical Center, Portsmouth. So first of all, thank you so much, Dr. Panettiere, for your service.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. And more importantly, though, I want to say he's a good friend. He is husband to his lovely wife, Nancy. So shout out to Nancy, who's probably listening because she adores you. And he's father to his three daughters and dog, Louie. So people know about Zoe. We've put pictures on Instagram of Zoe. We need to get a picture of Louie for this show. Louie and Zoe together. Be awesome. And most importantly, one of the things I really appreciate about Dr. Panettiere is that he loves the Lord. And so everything he does, like everything I do, is influenced by that Christian biblical worldview. So it's always great when we have somebody who is a physician who's also a Christian. Well, the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan have resulted in increased number of veterans who have experienced traumatic brain injuries. You see this every day in your work with active duty military.
That's right.
The Department of Defense and Veterans Brain Injury Center estimate that 22% of all combat casualties from these conflicts are brain injuries, compared to 12% of Vietnam-related combat casualties. 60 to 80% of soldiers who have had other blast injuries may also have traumatic brain injuries. I'd like to begin by you telling us, Dr. Panettiere, how bad the problem is and what you're actually seeing.
The incidence of traumatic brain injury has significantly increased, we think mainly because of the technological advances in body armor. And so what in prior conflicts like Vietnam and before would have killed people, now they are living through it, but sustaining the head injury that would have also been there had they not lived. Our focus in my job is to look mainly at mild traumatic brain injury, which is synonymous with concussion from the sports world. The main thing is that what happens to the brain when there is a sudden acceleration or deceleration of it, as well as what happens when there's an overpressure from a blast. And in the combat arena, those are my main patients I'll see who sustain the traumatic brain injury in that way. I also see outpatients who live local to where I'm working, and they'll have more mundane things like motor vehicle accidents or hit their head on the dining room table when they drop their phone or something that could happen to anybody. And so they'll often have the exact same symptoms regardless of how they got it. And that's what our focus is, to understand why some people don't get better right away and also the nature of a long-term sequela from those kind of injuries.
The increase that you're talking about then in terms of combat is there's still blasts. So you're saying that through the years, there have been blasts in every war, things that you would be exposed to that would possibly create that. But the difference is in the gear that they're wearing and the way the helmets are configured.
Absolutely. So they are much more sustainable to life, much more effective in keeping people alive. The brain, though, is still vulnerable in those scenarios. And so if somebody lives through that and they're like, wow, I'm glad I made it, what's not recognized is what may have happened to the brain from that.
And does it show up right away when the person experiences a blast?
Oftentimes they'll have symptoms right away. They might have a headache. They might be confused. They certainly could be knocked out. Their speed of cognition and memory can be certainly affected. And so there are some delays, but most of the time it's within the first day or even in the first hour that they'll notice they're having some symptoms. The question is, do they persist or do they go away? And that's sort of the question and the way will it come to our care if they've not gotten better on their own in a few days.
Is it typical for those symptoms to just disappear over time?
For most people, probably 80% at 90, even maybe up to 90% of the time, they'll get better. They may need a little bit of assistance with some pain medicines for headaches, some anti-nausea medicines. But within usually a few weeks, most people feel reasonably well enough to go back to what they were doing. But about 10%, at least in the military environment, will continue to have symptoms beyond a few months, even out to a few years. Those are the people that come to my center to get treated and evaluated.
You mentioned accidents, falling. Are there other ways that people get TBI without having that trauma? Things like strokes?
Yeah, I mean, technically, you can have structural damage to your brain from any cause. Our focus mainly is more mechanical related and blast wave related, things that can move the brain suddenly or stop the brain suddenly when the skull is the surrounding environment, which can damage it.
I'm thinking of some of the people that might be listening that maybe stroke, lack of oxygen, maybe a tumor, maybe brain infection or inflammation or other infections. Those are not things that we typically think can create a traumatic brain injury, correct?
That's right. They don't, in the sense that there is obviously trauma to the brain, but it's through not from an external force.
Sort of non-traumatic.
Correct.
Way. So, but I think that's important because I don't think we think about that as, oh, I could get it from something other than a blow to the head. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, and you can have similar symptoms.
You said something about concussion, and people ask often, is traumatic brain injury the same as concussion? Talk about the difference in the maybe mild, moderate, severe, and how you make those distinctions.
When the situation of concussion comes up, it's synonymous with mild TBI, traumatic brain injury. So the definition, at least that the military uses, is has there been any alteration of consciousness, loss of consciousness, or post-traumatic amnesia? You either don't remember things leading up to the event or events leading afterwards, which is usually tied to them being confused. It's an irony of the job that I'm interviewing the person who was knocked out and asking them what happened. And we're kind of used to not having a lot of details can be a little hard.
Yeah.
And I'll rely on, well, what did others see, if there were any witnesses? What's your best recollection based on what transpired? How long could you have been knocked out? The first answer is, I don't know. I was knocked out. But usually you say, well, it was in minutes or seconds or probably hours. And usually it's usually seconds or minutes, and at least in a mild TBI case. But when you move up to moderate and severe traumatic brain injury, there's usually evidence of prolonged loss of consciousness or post-traumatic amnesia, and there are certain criteria that we use for that. And there also can be penetrating to the brain as well, where there may have been bleeding or the skull was actually fractured. So that puts you to higher levels where it's still they need to be treated and rehabilitated, but it's a different severity level than what I typically deal with the mild cases.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that mild form, what maybe listeners are seeing when they have an athlete in school, somebody gets hit in a football game and they're taken to the side, what they should be looking for, what are the signs, what you should do with that, maybe the follow-up with the physician. So more on traumatic brain injury right after the break. Stay with us.
Hey, it's Chris from the Dr. Linda Mental Radio Show. Dr. Linda's latest book is titled Living Beyond Pain. It gives practical tools to anyone who is living with chronic pain and wants to get his or her life back on track. Recently, Dr. Linda's listeners had questions about pain, and she answers those questions with tips from her book, Living Beyond Pain.
This is really touchy, but when I am in pain, the last thing I am thinking about is having intimacy with my spouse. I don't think he understands. What should I do?
If you're in pain, are you thinking a lot about having an intimate relationship with your spouse? Sex can really be hurtful when people are in pain as well. So you have to have conversations as a husband and wife about what's going on with that person. And one of the things to recognize is that the person may lack sexual desire due to the pain and the medications that they're taking. So again, having conversations with your physician, talking about that, how it's impacting your relationship. And without getting too graphic in this area, talk to somebody, think about ways to increase touch and other ways to show your affection as well when you're going through a particularly painful time. And always make sure that you're building non-sexual ways to stay intimate so that when we engage in these trying times where the pain is intense, we still have that connection to that other person.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Linda. If you would like a copy of Dr. Linda Mental's book, Living Beyond Pain, go to drlindamental.com, or you can find Living Beyond Pain anywhere books are sold online.
Mother and daughter relationships are powerful, and they impact all our other relationships. Think about it. The way you react with your mom typically is the way you might react with other people. Yet this important bond can be filled with tension when both women try to find their own voice and develop a sense of self. So working through the mother-daughter relationship can be a challenge, but it is so worth the effort. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and I would love to help you navigate this important relationship and strengthen it to the best it can be. That's why I wrote, I Love My Mother, But... a book to strengthen the mother-daughter relationship. We all love our mothers, but sometimes we need a little help working through our differences. I Love My Mother, But... available on my website, drlindamental.com, or online where books are sold.
Letting Go of Worry by Dr. Linda Mental, available on her website at drlindamental.com and online.
Well, welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Today's topic is traumatic brain injury. We've got a lot more to talk about. But before we move on, I want to remind you about my website, drlindamental.com. There you will find blogs, books, and you can connect with me on social media. And I would love to have you connect. It's a really easy way to follow what I'm writing about every week. You can see different topics on relationships. One week you might read about divorce and ways to prevent that. Another week you might relate to a show on how does sleep affect your relationships. And remember, you can listen to the podcast anytime on iTunes. And Chris has the day off today, so we're talking with our special guest, Dr. Tony Panettiere. In case you've just joined us, let me give you just a little bit of background about Dr. Panettiere. He is a board-certified physician in both neurology and sleep medicine, and is a member of the American Academy of Neurology and the American Association of Sleep Medicine and the American Medical Association. In addition to his clinical work, he's also co-authored several posters on sleep and traumatic brain injury. He works with the military on this area, traumatic brain injury and PTSD. Would you say those are your two big areas that you're working with the Intrepid?
The National Intrepid Center of Excellence is in Bethesda, Maryland. It was started by the Fisher Foundation, and most people know the Fisher Houses, which is house people who visit wounded service members, like family members, so they don't have to pay for hotels. And after he built about 50 of the houses, he came to the military and said, what else do you need? It was around 2008 or 9. The need then was coming from these recent wars we've been in, where people were getting injured, injuring their brain, and persistently having symptoms, which we call them the invisible wounds of war. Mm. And so that started a conversation, which eventually led to sort of the flagship facility being built on the grounds of Walter Reed in Bethesda. And we subsequently gone out to construct another 9, what are called Intrepid Spirits, which are smaller facilities still handling traumatic brain injury at local bases throughout the country. And so he continues to raise money to finish that project out. I think it'll be 10 total when it's all done. But it's an incredible, worthy project, and it's really meeting the needs of what the military had to have for treating people, as well as researching why they have these symptoms happening.
What I love about where you work is I've been there. You've given me a tour through the facility, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's not what you would think of as a sterile government building. So he has done a fantastic job of making it a great, warm, welcoming place and has put top-notch, state-of-the-art equipment in there. Our active duty members are really getting a good experience with the help of someone like him. So if you have a chance, look it up on the internet. You can see what the great work that they do. Tony is just one of the many people who have done a lot to help our military. So we not only thank him for his service in the Navy, 25 years he put in, but now he's working with active duty military as well. We've been talking specifically about traumatic brain injury. People that are hearing our show are thinking, well, is that something that I should be concerned about? I have an 11-year-old, let's say, who's playing peewee football. Is that something I should be thinking about every time they get hit in the body or hit in the head?
Definitely. Yes, I think that parents can never be too cautious about their children, nor about themselves. You know, I think that it's important to have a bike helmet on every time you bike, even as an adult. I'm still, if I ride my bike, I got a helmet on.
Oh boy, we're in trouble, Norm. Yeah. We don't wear our helmets.
Well, but it's not so much I fear I'm going to fall off my bike from losing my balance, but I may have a tire blow. I may hit a rock that kicks the wheel out. I may have a bird or insect fly into my face and I lose my focus. So those are the scenarios that are most likely where you can really fall and hit your head pretty hard. As far as children, though, I'm very careful about it because the number one sport in high school, most people think football is where traumatic brain injury comes. It's actually in girls' soccer. And we think that's mainly partly because of the heading of the ball or heading another player's head and also the lack of strength in the neck that a young girl would have in high school. A lot of times there'll be mild concussions out of that, not necessarily knocked out, but dazed, and they continue to play and then potentially have problems with school the rest of the week if it could even go unrecognized. The importance of protecting the head, not doing risky activities where there is a risk for that, or at least taking safeguards to be mindful of what could happen and the ramifications that will have in terms of their symptoms and function the rest of their life potentially.
Walk us through the symptoms. First, start with the physical symptoms that parents should be looking for if they have a child playing sports.
So if there's been an episode where there's been head impact, and not every head impact is considered a concussion, it depends on what happened there. Did they lose consciousness? Did they have alteration of consciousness? Or did they have amnesia for what happening? So if there's any question along the sidelines, a coach will do an assessment there where they'll sort of run through some mental status questions. Not so much what's your name, where everybody can usually remember, but they'll sort of be like, who are we playing? What's the score? Who did we play last week? What was the score? Things you have to be pretty sharp to remember.
So they're looking for mental confusion.
Mental confusion issues, exactly. And so to the player who's desperately wanting to stay in the game, they'll often say, I'm fine, coach, put me back in. But the coaches have the parents' best interests at mind, they'll be trying to make sure they don't put them at risk for a repeat injury. The main symptoms they'll have if there's been a concussion would be headaches. Usually it'll be right after they've had that happen. They can have some difficulty with being very sleepy, immediately so. A lot of times your parent is told to keep the child awake. That's not necessarily something we ascribe to any longer. Obviously, if there's a need to sleep, the child should sleep. As long as they've been checked mentally and they're okay, we don't think there's something serious going on. So usually, in terms of being able to go to sleep, if there's any doubt of that, I would have them taken to urgent care in an emergency room and get them checked, scanned if necessary. Again, not every head impact needs to be scanned. It's really all about how well the exam looks, especially in the mental state of the person. Dizziness is another symptom that's common. There can be a difficulty walking. They can actually, if it's bad enough, they can have nausea and vomiting. I myself had that happen. I played baseball in high school and college and got hit in the head a few times.
Oh, and Nancy would say that explains it. No, she wouldn't. She was not.
Right.
She's not mean like I am sometimes
right.
to Chris.
And then there can be fatigue, double vision, and light sensitivity, as well as ringing in your ears. Any or all of those can occur after head injury. Again, it doesn't necessarily sinister or terribly worrisome if that's what happened, because for most people, they will get better from that within a few weeks or so. But those are typical signs that the brain has been hit hard enough or decelerated hard enough in such a way that it's not functioning optimally at that moment.
You've mentioned a number of the cognitive symptoms of concentration, the memory issues, slower thinking, confusion. What about emotional issues that parents could look for?
The main ones we would see would be related to irritability, anxiety, mood swings, depression. And that often stems from the fact that the person who's injured is quite frustrated by their deficits and by their fatigue. And of course, if you're up against a school schedule and you're falling further and further behind, it certainly adds to the sense that you really are losing ground and you have a lot of stress to catch up. And so that can manifest in the behavioral health realm. Those, again, things don't necessarily require medication. It all kind of goes with the complex of symptoms from a head injury. And again, usually time is what we need to allow people to get better. The way we usually manage it initially is to have them not do anything, but actually to do a little bit of activity. So if they're in school, we may say they get accommodation where they're not doing any tests for the first week. Just let them do some reading at their own pace. Exercise, maybe do some walking at their own pace. Certainly, if it's a sports-related injury, they have to stay out of the sport for a period of time. And then as they build up their either physical or mental capabilities, you're looking for at what point do they get a headache? Do they feel dizzy again? Hold off to that. The next day they come back and they try to rechallenge that same duration of activity and see if they can get there without having a headache or other symptoms. And eventually you want them to be not only symptom-free at rest, but symptom-free under the pressure of their whatever they're supposed to do. And usually at that point is return to play will allow them to go back if it's a sport or back to full speed in school without accommodation.
Well, it's very helpful. It's good tips for parents to learn. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about some practical preventive measures. More on the Dr. Linda Mental Show after the break. Are your priorities all out of line? Are you running through the kitchen because the sight of dishes in the sink is more than you can bear? Or avoiding the laundry room for fear a pile of dirty jeans will jump up and grab you? Are extra hours spent at work or outside commitments taking a toll on your home and family? Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mintel, the relationship doctor. And if this sounds anything like your house, you may have a priority problem. Getting your priorities in line might feel like trying to rein in a bucking bronco, but it can be done. Here are a few keys. Take small steps. Don't try to attack laundry and housekeeping all at once. Spread the work out and enlist the help of family members. And don't put things off. Piling another dish and a cup in the sink won't help. Instead, try and stay ahead by handling cleaning up more regularly. Look, we all have occasions when we have to hurry off and leave a job or two undone. But if this is your habit, you may need a priority adjustment. And you can do it one step at a time. You're listening to the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Chris is off this weekend, and we have a very special guest, Dr. Tony Panettiere, who is a practicing neurologist who currently treats our active duty soldiers, which means he sees traumatic brain injury often. That was one of the reasons why we asked him to come and talk about this very important topic. Most people, Tony, have heard about traumatic brain injury. I think if you turn on television and you watch any athletic event, you're seeing an athlete who's been sidelined, or you're hearing more about the importance of protecting the brain. One of the things we didn't talk about is you can get body slammed. So we're always thinking, you know, you mentioned that soccer was the number one sport, and those heading, is that what they call it? Heading? When you score a goal that way, you're directly hitting your head with the ball. But what about all the body contact? Those people who play hockey and they're getting slammed all the time against the wall, or the offensive linemen in a football game, are they just as at risk? And does it matter? This is the second part of my question. Does it matter if you repeatedly get hit over and over and over, time and again?
It definitely does matter. So the number of events that a football player may engage in practice, in the games, over childhood, high school, college, pro career, is far more than the average person will ever see, especially at a high competitive level. In the military environment, it's usually an event here, an event there, widely separated by time, typically. The number of events matter a lot. Obviously, the severity of the event matters a lot. So the cumulative effect plays a role. Usually what we talk about, though, is each episode of head injury will take longer to recover from. And at some point in one's life, they have to say, if they're certainly if they're playing sports and rising up through the ranks, at some point they have to say, how many more times can I tolerate getting hit in the head and not have long-term problems from this? And so some football players have hung up their jerseys because of that reason, recognizing that, wow, this is not the way I want to live, have persistent headaches, dizziness, things like that. They may eventually recover from, but they may have suffered with it for a year or two after the last head injury. I'm very mindful of people when they've had one head injury, whatever quick recovery you may have had the first time, it's not necessarily going to go like that the second time, even for the same type of blow.
Are those NFL players, are they evaluated for the number of times they're hit? Because you will hear somebody who's fairly young who says, I'm stepping away. There was a recent NFL player, I think in his late 20s, saying, that's it, I've had enough, I'm done, because I don't want to jeopardize my future. And then you have some players who've been playing forever, and they've been a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman, and then you hear years later that they're struggling. Is any of that related to all of those blows?
Right. In some cases, like in boxers, they'll have Parkinson-like symptoms from years of repetitive head injury. I generally tell people when they've had isolated traumatic brain injury here and there in their life, that's not a factor. They may still get Parkinson's, but it's not because
it's
of
not
what
because
happened earlier.
They had a blow to the head.
Correct. Okay. That's right. There are certain positions in football. They're certainly more prone to helmet-to-helmet contact through the game. I see a lot of patients with that football background. They enter into the military, for instance, already had a lot of sort of low-grade, subconcussive blows to the head where maybe they could continue to practice, but they'd have a headache at the end of it. There was no one episode that made them incapacitated, but by the end of the day, they're not feeling right. When you see some players retire early, part of that is that it's hard to know how many times they may have been hit. Mm-hmm. A quarterback probably hit much less than a defensive player.
Depends on your team, actually.
Okay, that's true.
You're with the Bears this season, you're going to get hit a lot.
Absolutely. But I think that also that as people learn more about this and read about it and look at other people who are similarly affected, they say, I really don't want to go through that. I want a quality of life. And that's why they often will step away from sport.
For the elderly, just give us a few quick preventive tips in terms of preventing falls, because we're concerned about people falling or hitting their head, or especially in the winter.
Well, as people get older, they certainly have visual issues. Maybe they have bifocals they're getting used to. They can't judge where the steps and the floor, how close they are to stepping on it. They usually don't have as good a righting mechanism. So if they slip, they can't throw their arm out as fast as they could when they were younger. There is obviously balance issues and hearing that are not as good as you get older. So all those things should be treated. It's a little sometimes vain to have a cane or to put up a thing in the shower so you're less likely to fall. But a handrail is often helpful. Non-slip mat in the bathtub or the shower helps. Area rugs are not good because they can slide on the linoleum floor as well. And the staircase should have handrails on both sides. You should have good lighting, maybe floor lighting, night lights on the outlets in the hallway if you should have to go by there getting up at night to use the restroom. You want to just keep the area decluttered so you don't actually step on an item of clothing or something. And generally, also just regular exercise. Sometimes yoga is helpful for improving balance for older people. It's not very strenuous, but it's good for mobility.
Or Pilates would be another core strengthening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Something that strengthens the core.
The core, right. So it doesn't have to be running or lifting weights necessarily. And then being sure your vision is good and that you're not having any acuity problems where you can't judge where you're stepping.
Those are great tips. We're out of time, Dr. Panettiere, and I feel like, again, we're just getting started on a topic that we could talk a lot about, especially with all the number of times we hear about military people dealing with bomb blasts, and even in the era of terror, when we're hearing about people having been exposed to things like the Boston bombing, and they would never think about the impact of that. And then all the kids that are playing sports and are athletes. So protecting the head seems to be the key in all of this, and not have it be shaken or hit or a part of a blast would be the best prevention. Thank you so much for coming in today. We appreciate your time and all that you're doing to not only help our veterans, but educating all of us on traumatic brain injury. Well, many thanks to our producer, Norm Mintel, our engineer, Chris Weigel, and my special guest, Dr. Tony Panettiere, who made this show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we are doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone. Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.